You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 1st, 2016. You're listening to episode 192. My name Rob. That name Jason.
Hey.
Oh, I almost had it.
That was awesome. My name Rob. The best comment I heard, by the way, about Josiah doing the intro was from our friend Alan, who said he did it better than Rob does.
needed a little editing.
He did, but yeah, well, yours do too. So yeah. You just don't do it for yours.
Anyways, my name Rob. That guy named Jason. Greetings.
Me, Rob, dat Jason. Me, Rob, you, Jason. Well, it's backward. Me, Jason, you, Rob. Well, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They're making a new Tarzan movie. Are That's going to suck.
Whatever.
So have you ever, like, sometimes when, like, first of all, hello, Mr. Newman. We're going to talk about movies for a minute. and it's going to be digital. So, anyways.
Super digital.
Yeah. So, have you ever, like, when they say they're making a movie, right? Like, we're going to make this movie. We're going to make this television show. And, like, I mean, I'm not a professional at this stuff, but I'm immediately like, that's going to be terrible. It's going to fail. It's going to flop. It's not going to make any money.
Yeah.
And then they make it anyways, and it does. And I'm just this guy in Kalamazoo, Michigan, with half a brain who can say, this is going to fail. Yet, hundreds of people are signing checks to make this thing that's going to fail.
Well, the thing is that sometimes it doesn't fail.
Yeah, but usually it does, right?
Hey, I mean, but times that it succeeds, so much money is made that it outweighs.
It's very infrequent that I would say this movie's going to fail and be wrong about it. And again, I'm just a guy.
Well, clearly you're smarter than most executives in Hollywood.
I don't think that's the case.
What is your rationale?
I think that I'm more in touch with the people who go see movies than the executives in Hollywood.
I think what the difference is that you are not exposed to all the other business stuff around making movies and TV shows, because there's a whole lot of other business stuff.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of business happening in that business.
I think I see the most with TV shows. You see a TV show, right? And it's like this new TV show with these stars and blah blah blah. And I'm like, canceled midway through the first season, guaranteed. I would bet my life savings on it.
Like, and like four Heroes episodes Reborn, in. Reborn, for
yes,
example.
Yes, like Heroes Reborn. It's not Heroes, it's better. It's the same crappy show that doesn't make any sense. I read the updates from Rob Bricken on IO9 just because I love to hear him rip it. And like, his headlines are so great for it, right? So that always cracks me up.
Well, see, but they're making some piece of entertainment to fill an hour so that they can sell advertising. And in order to sell advertising, they need to just check a few boxes in terms of production budget and number of familiar faces in the cast.
Right.
And you know, general tone or subject matter in order to sell advertising.
What surprised me about Heroes Reborn was Heroes was not doing well when it got canceled, right? So the idea that they're going to remake it.
And it wasn't canceled that long ago.
4 or 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
At that, if that?
Yeah.
And the show was terrible. Like, that show, I hold it
lasted
in
like
my
three
heart
seasons,
as,
though.
Actually, I think it was four. Yeah. But that was the show that I had 3 episodes left on my DVR. 3 episodes to the series finale.
You just didn't
And
bother.
I just deleted them. Because that is how bad I didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
That has never happened before, and I bet it will never happen again. That's like that. That is a special kind of suck, right? I want to give a shout out to another show that I've been watching a lot lately, and that's Departures. That you turned me on to. Actually,
yeah.
I just watched the episode where they go to Fez and they see the things where they made you pitch.
Wasn't
Marrakesh.
That awesome?
So, yeah. That.
Yeah.
So if you are not watching this show, you need to go watch the show. And I don't care what it takes. I am going to find a way to see season 3 of this show because it's so good. And when it starts out, the one guy is like super bro, right? Like he is
super bro.
They clearly picked him because they needed a guy that would be funny.
It's funny.
And do crazy stuff.
Just game for anything, right?
And he's that guy, right?
Yeah, totally.
And then so the first season is, I mean, this is like a documentary travel show. So if you want to worry about spoilers, I guess don't listen, but I mean, come on, it's a documentary travel show, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the first season, they quit, right? Because I think it's kind of up in the air as to what the way they're doing the television shows as to whether or not they're actually going to sell these, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the first season, they know they're selling the show.
Yeah.
And the reason I know that is because Andre, the cameraman, at one point when they're drunk and he's stuck between the bed and the wall and he says, "We're never going to get renewed for a second season." And Justin says, "Why?" And he says, "Because I'm the cameraman. I'm the director of photography and I'm stuck between the bed and the wall. Yeah. There's nothing I can do about it."
It's so funny.
Yeah, it's so great. All the guys are, they're so honest.
They're great. Yeah.
We made the documentary HoboCon, right?
Yeah.
That show is everything we wanted that documentary to be. Is that a true statement?
And then we had zero opportunity of actually making that happen.
Right. But
compared to those guys, clueless
idiots. Guys are like fantastic with the equipment and like, even Justin, the bro guy, he's a good cameraman. Like,
he's all right.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, they do a good job, right?
Yeah.
But anyways, at the end of the first season, Scott and Andre, the two professional filmmakers, right, mm-hmm. or professional video guys, videographers, right. they go back to, I think Scott is a producer in general and Andre is director of photography. They go back to their day jobs, right, of producing things. And I'm sure doing some stuff for the show, right, as well.
Right.
And Justin, he kind of has this epiphany, like, this is the life I want to live. So he just keeps traveling, right?
Yeah.
And he stops doing adventurous stuff. He kind of goes to Paris and he, like, bums around and does stuff like... but when we meet him in the second season, he's a different person, right?
Totally.
He's so much more grown up. And throughout this whole season, like, you still see glimpses of that bro dude underneath, like, it's just so cool, right? Because he has matured as a person.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like, it's so cool.
That show is amazing.
I love it. I wish they made 100 seasons of it.
Yeah.
I would watch so much of that.
It is one of the best travel shows I've ever seen.
And it's because it's so honest, right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, when bad stuff happens, they just talk about it. I was watching the episode where they went to Libya, right?
Uh-huh.
And they decide to play tag in this old metropolis, right?
Uh-huh.
And they get lost. And they get lost within like 5 minutes. Uh-huh. And you're just with the cameraman because nobody else has a camera.
He's totally lost.
He's losing his, like, he's
like losing his crap.
Because the sun is going to set.
Right.
And he's like, if the sun, he can't find a way. It's like an old sandstone city.
Old abandoned.
And if he can't find a way to the roofs, which he can't see how to do that. He's like, I'm so screwed. Like, he's like, it's going to be pitch black in here. I forgot my flashlight. Like in the panic in his face.
Yeah.
It's just so fantastic.
You can tell he's scared.
Yeah, because he's like, this city goes for like a mile. Like, and then eventually because he actually gives up on finding the guys. He's trying to find a way out so he can just go to the hotel just hope that they come back there, right?
Yeah.
And then he ends up running into them and then they end up finding the other guy. But like, it's so real. Like, you can tell that it's not set up, right? They really are just...
And they do dumb crap. Like, they ran out of gas on that island like 4 times.
Ascension Island, yeah.
And and then when they're in Japan, they put the wrong kind of gas in the car.
Diesel in the car.
Because they're idiots.
Yeah.
Because they're just idiots.
When they were in Brazil, they broke the clutch on the car.
Yeah.
And he had to drive the car back in third gear.
Yeah. Just because they're dumb.
It was... Oh, my gosh.
It's so good. It's so good.
But yeah, I mean, they'll... Oh, I love it. And like, there was the episode where they were somewhere... And they capture they're trying to go hunt a wild boar, right?
Yeah.
And Scott kills it, and Justin's like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, they find a baby, and they bring it back, and they're like, well, we're going to tame it and keep it and eventually eat it. And dude waits till they're all gone and goes over and sets it free.
Yeah.
He's like, screw you guys.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to let you kill this thing.
He's like, they're not going to invite me back, but whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
One of the things I love is Justin, like, for as much as he's just kind of this bro who likes to drink a lot, He's got like the biggest heart of anyone on that show, right? Like anytime there's kids, like there's the one episode they're in Cuba and he's walking around with the kids buying them stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like, and then the one kid starts taking advantage of him and it really drives him nuts, but he can't say no to the kid because he knows the kid doesn't have anything. So he feels bad. So he's like, I'm buying this kid all this stuff. And he's like, well, I just used the rest of my money to buy all his friends ice cream because he told them that I would.
Yep.
It's so great.
It's so great. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah.
So watch that show. It's on Netflix,
so
Departures. Once I figure out how to get to the third season, legally or illegally, I don't even care. I'll let you guys know.
I'm sure you can buy a DVD online or something. But
I would be totally fine with supporting that. Again, the show is so well
it's
done.
So good. It's so good. Yeah.
It's the most exciting thing I watch right now. So
mm-hmm.
And they go to the craziest places. I love they're not afraid. Like when I watched The Long Way Round and The Long Way Down, with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have all this like logistics planning and all the security stuff, and these guys go to the same type of places and they don't do any of that. Mm-hmm.
There's one episode where Scott's just stuck in an airport for like 2 days or something.
Yeah, that's the Morocco.
Okay.
I've actually just watched that one.
Okay,
yeah.
And he's like just sleeping behind a coffee stand or something. Is that Scott?
Because he actually gets out while they like mop behind there and he like sits back down.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just stuck there because their travel plans went awry. And it's cool because they're Canadian as well. So they're able to get, like, they got to Libya
and get places that Americans couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. Because remember in The Long Way Down, the American producer he couldn't go to Libya. They said, no, he's American. He can't come.
Right.
And he was the only one that couldn't go.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, it's such a great show. Oh my gosh. It's so good.
Yeah.
I just love it. I think because it's so relatable and so honest, and so many of those shows feel staged.
Yep.
And like they're super just
too well rehearsed.
Yeah. They're just these guys. They're just doing this thing.
It's so good.
And sometimes it's still, sometimes they really fail, right? Uh-huh. And sometimes they're awesome.
It's part of the adventure. Yeah. It's good.
So, yeah. Did you play any games lately?
I got Carcassonne on my iPhone finally.
Oh.
So I got a $10 gift card for Christmas.
So you're like, Carcassonne iTunes,
and I
was like,
yeah, it's, I mean, $10, right? $10 for the iPhone app, that's too much.
It is.
That should be like $3.
A lot of those games I get are $4.99.
Yeah.
And I support that, right? It's under $5. I get it, right?
Yeah.
$10?
$10 is too much for
$9.99.
And then there's $9.99. And there's a ton of microtransactions. If you want to get any expansion, you can buy all the expansions, but they're all microtransactions. They're all 99 cents or more. So actually, most of them, I think, are like $2.99 for the expansions, which is also total garbage.
If the base game was $4.99 and the other games were 99 cents,
it'd be easier to swallow.
That'd make a lot of sense.
Right. So I would never have bought it on my own, but since I had this iTunes gift card, I just went ahead and did it.
Right.
And see, I don't think I'm bad at Carcassonne. I think I'm pretty good at Carcassonne, but I'm playing against the easiest opponents on that app, and they're just mopping the floor with me. And I think it's because when I'm playing on my phone, I can only see a small section of the map at a time, and I can't keep track of everything. I can't see everything all at once, and so I have a hard time keeping track of what's going on where.
Yeah.
Likewise, the computer players take their turns super fast. It's like, done, you know?
And you're like, what happened? What did they do?
And I can't even keep track of what they're doing. And so it's almost like it's not super fair in giving me the opportunity to really see what's going on. And then I have as much time as I want to actually go back and figure out what they do, But
that's annoying, right?
But it's so fast.
You think maybe they'd highlight the ones they just put down or something? Well,
and they
you
do
know?
That too. They do that too. But
because you can't see the whole map, right?
It's hard for me to keep track of everything that's going on.
I wonder if it's better than an iPad.
It probably is because you can probably see more at a time.
Right.
But it's really frustrating. So that was a disappointment. So for $10, I'm just not pleased. And then all the microtransactions on top of that.
Yeah.
Just not worth it. So don't buy the Carcassonne app for your iPhone.
Yeah, I thought about buying it to teach me how to play, but I never bothered.
Yeah, so. And it doesn't, I mean, oh, and it also has some kind of solo mode, so you can play a solo version, but it's super broken. And like, it just locks up every time I try and do it. So also don't bother, because it's just buggy and garbage.
Are you sure that's not you? Because maybe you're so bad at the game that when you're by yourself, you actually break the game.
No, there were moments where I was like touching things on the screen and nothing was happening.
Oh yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it was terrible. So don't get the Carcassonne app. That was big fail.
Good news, I was not planning on it. So
builders, don't bother. It is as analog as you could possibly get. It is not digital.
Man,
it's not digital.
Man,
it's terrible. But I still actually prefer the analog tabletop game to the app. A lot. I'm conflicted in that those descriptions.
What you're saying is the analog game is super digital and the digital game is super analog.
That's it.
And that's hard for you to get your head around. That's fair.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about a topic because we keep not getting to our questions and I want
to
do that.
So
let's do that. And your game pitches always take longer than mine. So
this one will be a little shorter. We'll see. I don't know. Depends on how much you
I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying your game pitch is usually a little more, little thicker than mine are. And
so
that's okay.
Tonight we're going to talk about prototyping. Which is something we've talked about before. It's been a while.
We've talked about it at least two times as a topic.
Yeah, techniques for prototyping. But we get a lot of questions about it, so it's always worth coming back to.
It is by far our most requested topic. So, and, you know, talking about it together, we realized that The way we do things changes over time, right? So
absolutely.
So why not? Why not talk about those changes?
Yeah. Techniques that we use when coming up with prototypes, right? So the old standby is card sleeves, you know, and you put yes. and you put slips of paper into card sleeves. They're easy to swap out and change. You can back them with old Magic cards or something if you want to, just so you have something that feels a little bit better. But you certainly don't have to right. do that.
I print directly on cardstock.
Mm-hmm. I actually just print on regular paper because cardstock is more expensive. But
I don't print enough for it to matter. Mm-hmm. So, but I do splurge for cardstock because it's faster. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So, so when I first started out with this, I would spend time in Photoshop, you know, making a nicely arranged prototype card, and I wouldn't do a bunch of color in it, of course, but I would have borders and boxes and things to help right. the eye understand it. And after a little while, I stopped doing that because that just took more time than was necessary.
Yep.
And then I eventually went to just simple boxes on Microsoft Word, you know, you make 9 boxes on a sheet of paper yep. and then type your stuff in there. I'm at a point now where I'm actually prototyping my cards in Excel. And I'm doing that because I can organize columns and row heights so that I can fit 9 pages per card. And I can still organize things in columns or however I want. And I can easily have borders by just, you know, making borders on boxes and the crap in uh-huh. on cells in Excel. But then it's easy for me to copy the formatting across many, many sheets. And then I can just kind of keep hitting the tab key and just fill in blanks all the way across as I go. And I found that to be super, super handy. I really like cool. that a lot. And I am doing that almost exclusively now
cool.
when I'm making cards for my prototypes.
I still use my Word template that I've used forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten really good at it. Like I can mm-hmm. drop Word art in there and stuff or you know, little Google art pieces.
Yeah.
Really quickly. Mm-hmm. I think switching for me would be really hard.
Yeah.
And because it works for me, and there are times when I'm like, argh. Yeah. Want to throw stuff like what yeah. I need to put. But one of the things that I've started to do that I find has been very helpful is that I will, I used to like have everything typed, right? Like
yeah.
if there was a number in the top left corner, I would type the number in the top left corner.
Uh-huh.
Now I don't. Now I type it in a WordArt box and then I just copy that and paste it in all of them, you know, change it how I need it. Right.
Okay.
So that has been actually super great to me because then you can tell it to go in front of text or behind text.
Oh, sure.
And then you can just move it at will. Just move mm-hmm. it how you want it. And that, again, that works really good for me. That's kind of my jam, right? Mm-hmm. How I do it. And I really, yeah. So I've been doing it that way, and there's a cat making noise in the background. I don't know if anybody can hear that.
Probably hear it. Yeah.
So sorry. Anyways, so that's the main thing I do. Mm-hmm. I still keep a case with like bits and stuff, cubes, mm-hmm. the big bucket of cubes from, the big bucket of cubes from yeah. Amazon, mm-hmm. $20, best $20 you'll spend as
1,000 cubes.
Oh yeah.
100 cubes in 10 colors.
Yeah. And yeah. it is the best. I've bought it twice now, mm-hmm. because it's been so super useful mm-hmm. to me.
Yep.
And I've lost cubes and stuff. And I also just got lazy about sorting them out and was like, oh, yeah. just buy another box. It's $20. It'll last for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a big glass candy jar thing. Like, you know, the kind of thing you'd see in like a general store, the mm-hmm. big yep. honking, big spherical candy jar.
Yep.
That I just throw all my extra bits into.
Yep.
And man, just the longer you do this, the more of that kind of crap you collect.
I know, right?
Yeah, holy cow, where'd it all come from?
Yeah, like when I'm at Gen Con, a lot of times you'll be like by the ChessX booth or something, be like, oh, here's some new counters I haven't seen or some new yeah. pawns, and I'll just grab them so that I have some diversity with things when yeah. I want it, different things. Yeah.
Paper cutter, man. I bought a paper cutter, just a straight line paper cutter, and not the big swing arm. Deal. Right. Those are expensive. Surprisingly expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
Yeah. So I just bought a simple like Fiskars paper cutter. It really only cuts one sheet at a time. But for cutting out cards, oh, dude, totally worth the whatever $15 or whatever that it was. So much faster than scissors. Well worth it.
And I actually swear by scissors.
Why?
Because I'm bad with paper cutters. I always do them wrong. I always get off the line and stuff. I'm really quick with scissors. I cut out a lot of cards. Mm-hmm. I can do 2 or 3 sheets at once, you know, just mm-hmm. stack 2 sheets, usually just cut them up the line
yeah.
and, you know.
See, yeah, when I do that, I'll inevitably get the sheets a little off center, and so I end up cutting that crooked. Plus, if I cut too much, my hand will start to cramp up a little bit or hurt from the scissors.
Right.
And so that paper cutter, I'll swear by it.
Next time I'm at your place, you'll have to show me how you yeah. use it, because it just doesn't. It doesn't appeal to me as being mm-hmm. good. Plus, you have to change the blade out a lot, don't you?
I've never changed the blade on mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to right. know.
And I, when I bought it, I bought it with 2 extra blades, and I've I've used it a lot and I haven't. I mean, so like if I was cutting cardstock more often, I probably would have needed to. But since I shoot regular paper, it's not a big deal. And I can tell the blade is dull, but with the regular paper I use, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. So I like that a lot. Let's see. What else? Other prototyping techniques. Don't be afraid of using colored markers instead of printing in color on your printer. I do that from time to time where I'll just take a marker out and scribble on something if I need stuff to be sorted by color.
Yep. I do the exact same thing. Like, whenever I was doing, some of the games I've worked on have had matching where you have to like match the like, colors and stuff on them. And I just take a highlighter, a colored highlighter and put a line.
Yeah.
You know, on Shipwreck Shore, the newest game I have where you have to match stuff. I actually just went with shapes. So specific shapes for each different thing.
Sure.
That took a little longer, but I wanted a little bit of a nicer prototype that I knew I could build off from going forward. So I just did that on purpose.
Sure. Another good thing is different color card sleeves. If you have different decks of cards in your game or different card types that don't need to be shuffled together, man, different colored card sleeves is the best quick and easy sorting things back out. Do that. I think I've probably got about 300 card sleeves, you know, of one color. And I think I've got 4 or 5 different colors and I just keep tearing apart old prototypes and reusing them.
Me too. You have a big box full of them, and I have tons of black and red, so those are like my go-tos, but...
I've got a bunch of blue and green, because I got a bunch of blue and green back when I was doing Frankenstein's Legacy, and since then I've added black and white and red, actually, so 5 different colors. I've probably got 200 or 300 in each color.
I've probably got 7 or 8 colors, but a lot of them I only have like 30 or 40 in, but one thing to remember for ease of sorting things, when you're making a prototype with like 5 different types of cards that don't have to be shuffled together... If you can use different colors on purpose.
Yeah.
Because you should, when you sort them out, it's so much faster, especially since it's a prototype. Right. So the front of the cards may not be great to tell you that.
Yep.
You know, whenever possible, do that. I've done that. And when it comes to setup, it makes it go way faster. And you can, if somebody's helping you set up, hey, separate the cards by color. Done.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, look for cards that have this symbol on them and put them aside. You know, that sucks.
I'm a big fan. This is a little bit less, not so much about creating or you know, physical prototypes, but I'm a big fan of version tracking. And I started doing this most completely with Saloon Tycoon. Once I got that to a pretty solid spot, once I got it past the initial prototype phase, I made a spreadsheet just in Google Drive that I tracked everything on. And then anytime I would come back to make a revision, I would copy that to a new tab in the spreadsheet.
Right.
And then make adjustments to that new tab. And then I could always go back and see what I had before.
Right.
And look at what I was changing and think about why I made the decision to make that change.
Right.
And I have found that abundantly helpful to see those versions. And I'll assign different version numbers to each tab, you know, version 1.0, 1.2, 1.3, or whatever, you know?
Right.
And I do that a lot.
On a more complex game like that, that actually became more complex as you designed it.
Yeah.
It's great to have that.
It helped me keep that organized.
I do that with rules documents. With Ramblers, I've got like 6 different versions of rules, like, and they're all labeled like simplified rules, complex rules, like, you know what I mean? Because over the time that I've worked on it, it's had so many different iterations, and I want to be able to look back and say, what did I do when I had it like this? Oh, I did this. Okay, maybe I could steal that and use it in this. So, that's really good. I'm not as good about that as I should be. I do that mostly with rules, not with when I do changes. I'm not as good about saying like what were the numbers I had last time. I've been better about that with my the drafting game now. I changed it to get it to 54 cards, and I purposely said bigger version, smaller version, and kept both lines so that I could make sure the reason I did it to start with is to make sure my percentages were the same, right?
Sure. For
this percentage of this card, that card, that card. I wanted to get as close as I could to that same percentage split with less cards.
Yeah.
You know, just because I do. So one of the best tools you're going to find is using Google Drive for docs and for spreadsheets, man. Oh, because then you've got your stuff anywhere.
Yeah.
If you forget to bring rules, you can pull it up on your phone.
Yep.
I've done that in countless times.
Yeah, it's great. So it's great. Yeah. I like to make annotations on those different tabs in the spreadsheet, and not just I mean, not just the version, but I'll put the date that I finalize this version. You know, if I'm taking it to a specific event, I'll even put a note in there saying playtesting at this thing, you know,
right.
Or the people I'm going to end up playtesting it with. And after I do that playtest, sometimes I'll even make notes about thoughts or you know, if I'm not going to make a note, make a specific change, but it's something I'm considering, I'll make a note at the bottom saying, here's something to look for to remind myself what to watch out for.
Yep.
So all that stuff is extremely helpful. And again, you know, the kind of notes you can make again on your phone while you're in the middle of a playtest.
And the other thing that's really cool about Google Drive is, I do this a lot with rules. I'll share them with someone and say, can you read these? Right.
Yeah.
So like whenever Neil Roberts reads a lot of my rules, whenever I send them to him, I send him over and say, hey man, can you read these rules?
Mm-hmm.
He says, sure. And then he just comments in them. I can give him permission to comment, not edit. And he just goes in and puts comments in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can go in and answer the questions and resolve them. And you and I actually do that together a lot where we send each other rules and we just comment on them. That's a great tool.
Yeah. So Google has some awesome tools for that. Gosh, let's see. What else? I used to take time to try and find a good container to carry things around in, but you were just using Ziploc bags and I just started doing that. And man, that just is so much better because it just, I don't have to think about it.
Right. And I've actually gotten away from that a little bit only because I was at a convention. Is it Grand Con maybe? I don't remember. No, it was Gen Con. And this place had like a bargain bin of and it had deck boxes, like the people use for magic cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought three or four of those in different colors. Mm-hmm. So because I've been working a lot on card games lately, and a 70 to 90 card game fits in one of those, even in sleeves. So that's been awesome for me. For anything bigger though, yes, I use Ziploc bags. I use the kind with the slide lock. It's awesome, right? You can write right on the front, this is the name of the game. Mm-hmm. They store real easy in a bag. They don't take up hardly any space.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the only time I've switched away from that is, like I said, if it's just a card game and I can throw it in a deck box, or like Ramblers, I bought a special case for the thing and then put a sticker on the front to make it look a little nicer for when I'm showing people, you know?
Sure. So, yeah. Oh, gosh. Let's see. What else? What else you got?
So other things you can do, you know, one of the things, your prototypes do not have to look pretty, right? But they do need to be usable. So that's something that I've found sometimes the hard way, where you just quick throw something together and then people are like, what's this? I don't understand. What's this? And I know you've had that problem sometimes too, where it's like, wait, what is, I don't understand this. So it's important that you think about other people's perspective when you're making the prototype, to make sure it's usable. That's the most important thing, is just make sure it's playable and, you know, so I don't try and put too much into it because people then start to judge it as farther along in the process than it is. Right.
Yeah. That's another problem that I had early on, is trying to put too much effort into
it. And then people want to critique your graphic design and you're like, but dude, it's a prototype. Well, you may, it looks fancy.
Yeah.
One of the things that I also found, along those lines is, the river game that turned into the drafting game, the first time people played it, they kind of disregarded it until like halfway through the game because it was like item A, item B, item C. And and I never do that, but I was at a loss for what to label these things.
Theme for it, yeah.
Yeah. And that actually, that made people not want to play it. Now, granted, it was great because when they played it, they're like, whoa, this is fun. But they didn't want to play it because, you know, so think about that.
Yeah. That's something that I also learned the hard way too, where, cause you know, early on I was trying to just think about mechanics and, you know, I just wanted to make sure this works mechanically. I'm not going to spend a lot of time coming up with creative names for things, but that hurt me a lot.
Yeah.
It affected my own opinion of some prototypes,
right?
You know, and like, you know, if I took the time to apply names to cards, you know, and actually give something to the theme in an early prototype, it really did help a lot.
Yeah.
Because you know, item A is super boring.
Right.
But if it's, instead of item A, it's, you know, rabbit's foot, that's instantly something that I can remember more and my brain will connect with better.
And I can find Google Art. That's a rabbit's foot.
Yeah, right.
And throw it on there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to be said for that. You know, like one of the tricks I did with that, with the drafting game, I keep talking about that, but it's just the most fresh prototype I've done.
Sure.
Right? I went on Google and I found drawings this person had did of buildings, right? And it was kind of fancy, funky drawings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he did like 10 different buildings, right? So I went in, blew it up in Photoshop as big as I could get it, and then just cut out a building at a time, pasted it into Word, and then boom, there are my buildings. And I just put them right in the thing. And what was cool was, the style is exactly the same on all of them. So it actually looks like oh, he has the same type of artwork on all these, which I was pretty proud of because I was able to make it work on my own.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's something to think about, you know, if you can,
sure is.
You don't want it to be distracting, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's something, you know, that's to remember is you don't want it to be distracting.
But some kind of imagery and some kind of labels, some kind of names, some real titles are helpful for players.
Yep.
Yeah.
And even with, you know, like some of the people that I was showing my drafting game to at first, they were like publishers who were just friends showing stuff, but like people who know games and like they can look at a raw game and say, oh yeah, I get this, right? Mm-hmm. And they have trouble looking at it.
Yeah.
So when you think about it that way, it's not just like, because I would always say, well, if you do that because, you know, new players are like, oh, I don't understand this. But no, like well-defined players who know what they're doing still can have problems with that. Yeah, so something to remember.
Yep.
All right.
I think it's probably enough, eh?
Yeah. I think that if you have any other specific prototyping questions about what we do.
Yep. Or any of your own tips or things that you
send them
do.
On in.
Send them in. Buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. Yep.
Or hit us on Twitter @podcastbtg, and we'll mention those.
Absolutely. Cool.
So, all right, pitch a game.
I'm going to pitch a game. All right, this one was getting to be about an hour before I had to be here tonight, and so I was like, oh, crap, I need a game to pitch. And then I went to my computer I got a sandwich, and I went to the computer, and I ate my sandwich, and I started typing Google Drive, and then my internet failed, and I couldn't do anything else in Google Drive, and I panicked. And rather than trying to reboot my computer and try and get the internet back, I just said, screw it, and I opened a Word doc and started over. So, this idea was written up very quickly.
Okay.
All right. But that
said, still have a full page of writing, which is impressive.
Yeah. It comes out quickly sometimes. So, this name is bad. I'm really good at coming up with dumb game names, right?
It's true.
Okay, so this is called Astrogate.
Yeah, that's
Not Stargate.
Not Stargate.
So Astrogate is... Yeah.
That's a bad name.
It's a bad name.
Is the name of Stargate? No, Astrogate. Oh, sorry. Got it.
Astrogate, yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. But it's not a Stargate. It's kind of a Stargate. But it's... thematically different. Okay, so the fiction of this world. All right, let just quick and dirty here. The players. This is a for 3 to 6 players. Okay.
Okay.
And players represent just different conglomerates or companies or factions, whatever. Maybe they're different governments. I don't know. So they're competing factions, and they are all kind of gathered around the Astrogate. Okay. The Astrogate is some kind of a structure in space that when you put a ship or something, a spaceship, into the Astrogate, it is transmitted to another point in the universe, and it can return. Okay, and there are Astrogates all over the universe. Who knows how they were created or who put them there? Whatever. That's a different part of the fiction. You want to be the faction that comes to control the Astrogate.
Fair enough.
Okay. Because if you control the Astrogate, then you get to decide where it goes and no one else has any input. And when it's uncontrolled by one faction, then anybody can have influence on what happens with the Astrogate. So you want to be the one to control it, because then you can control basically commerce across the galaxy. Okay. So I guess that's enough setup.
Okay, all right.
All right. We'll start with some components here. So I said 3 to 6 player game. We've got 2 decks of cards. The main deck is the action deck, and they're just I'll get to that. Then there's a smaller deck of cards that are let's see. It's going to be 12 cards in this small deck. Okay. There are basically 3 types of influence that you can gain. You can call them resources, but I'm calling them 3 different influences.
Okay.
Okay. And in this initial influence deck, there are 4 of each type, and those types are power, science, and diplomacy. Okay? All right. So at the start of the game, you shuffle up those cards, and you deal every player 1 of those cards, and they keep that secret. So that is basically their secret goal, and they want to control the Astrogate by maxing out... By getting enough influence in that of that specific type, and then they can take control of the Astrogate. Okay,
that makes sense. So you want any type.
Well, so you have your card, right? And that's what your goal. So if I get a card and it says power, I want to control the Astrogate with power.
Okay.
Okay. But I could at some point, depending on how my game goes, I could instead take control of the Astrogate using diplomacy, but then I'm going to give up the point bonus, the victory point bonus. I'm going to get from this card. Okay.
So I assume that I could get power and you could get power too.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. So we could have a three-player game going, and depending on how the shuffle goes, we might all end up with power, all three of us, because there's four of each type in the deck.
There could be a balance issue if we ended up with power and the third person ended up with some diplomacy.
Well, okay. Well, so I've thought about that.
Oh, okay. Wow. In 10 minutes.
Hey,
all right.
This is remarkably complete for the short period of time I spent on it. Okay. So then you shuffle your action deck. We've also got dice. Okay. For each of the influence types, they're each assigned a color. Let's say red, yellow, blue. Okay. Then there are also dice that are red, yellow, and blue, and there's four of each type. Okay. Just regular D6s. They're not regular. They're custom dice. If red is power, then there are going to be three faces that are power, two faces that are science, and one face that's diplomacy. Okay. So depending on the color, it gives you more of each influence type. Okay. Shuffle the action deck, and each player gets five cards from the action deck to start the game. Okay. You're also going to get a player board, and the player board has three scales on it that correspond to three influences. And I think they're numbered 1 through 8. I think the max is you can get 8 points in each thing. And then you have a cube on each one to track your position. All right. Let's see. Look at my notes. Okay. When you max out one of the scales, you can choose to spend all 8 of those points to take over the Astrogate, but you don't have to, okay? Because when you take over the Astrogate, that is what ends the game.
So you may know you're not going to win.
Right, so you might not want to end the game yet, depending on how you're doing. Because somebody else might have higher scales across the board and might have more points ready to go than you do. But, of course, you don't know if they've got enough points to max out with their specific point bonus. And that's to come back in balancing is the idea. So, okay. Then the last thing is the game box. The center of the board is the game box that sits open. Printed on the inside is the actual Astro Gate. Okay, and you're just going to roll your dice in that, and the boxes there just keep them from going everywhere. Where they land in the box doesn't matter. This is like what was that game? Rattle Battle. All it matters with placement of everything, and it was hard to keep track of that.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that I hated the most about that game. This one, it's just something to roll in. Just to keep that easy.
Cool.
Okay. So, on a turn, the first thing you're going to do on your turn is you're going to set one die of each color into the box, okay? You're going to build a dice pool that's going to be rolled on that turn, okay? So, at the start of that, you put one of each color in there. So, at the minimum, you're going to roll 3 dice, okay? Unless you play a card that might remove a die, but we'll get to that, okay? Then, player one begins by playing a single action card. Okay, and those action cards can do a lot of different things. They might add another die. They might remove a die. They might give you some points on one of your influence scales that you can spend. A card might allow you to spend points from your scale to take other actions. Might allow you to play extra cards or steal cards from other players. A lot of different things those action cards might allow you to do, all with the goal of gaining more control over what's going to happen. Okay, after you play your one card, then it goes to the player on the left, and then he or she is going to play a card, okay, and have the same options. And you go around the table each time, and everybody plays a card. So hopefully by the time it gets back to player one, there are more than 3 dice in there. Maybe not, depends on what people play. But the idea is that everyone around the table is going to be putting their input, their control into the destination of the Astrogate. Okay.
Makes sense.
Okay. Then back to player one, they get to play one more card to try and make some final determination about what's going to happen. And then they pick up all the dice in there and they roll them. Okay. So, let's see, back to my notes. Okay. The result of the roll, basically describes, what kind of a world that his ship was sent to. Because he doesn't know where he's going to end up, right?
Right.
Okay. So thematically, it's like your explorers are going out through this gate to some other planetary body or some other location out there. And the result of the roll basically explains the adventure that they embarked upon. Okay. And the faces that are revealed in those dice correspond, again, with the influence types, right? And so then the player... gets to pick up those dice to earn points for their scale. Okay. Let's see. Reading my notes. Okay. But you're probably not going to be able to pick up all the dice. In fact, it's very unlikely you'll be able to pick up all the dice and take all of the points that have been rolled. You're going to be able to pick up a minimum of one for each type, assuming that there is one of each type out there. And very likely there is, but no guarantees. And then we get into a kind of a rock, paper, scissors thing, where if you have a lot of power points, so power dominates diplomacy, diplomacy dominates science, and science dominates power.
Okay.
So if you have a high power, and this is a little fuzzy part that I might actually need a little help understanding in getting nailed down. So I want it to be that if you have a lot of power, then you can take an extra diplomacy point. If you have a lot of diplomacy, you can take an extra science point. If you have a lot of science, you can take an extra power point, because the one dominates the other. So in some way, I need that to connect. This is the fuzzy part.
Right.
And maybe there are thresholds on your scale, you know?
Well, it could be, too, that whoever has the most science gets to take an extra, like you could have it say that when the dice are rolled, the person with the most science is guaranteed, if there's a power die, to get one power die.
Okay.
Guaranteed.
Could
so,
do that.
Like, if I'm player three and there's only one power die, players one and two can't take it because I got the most science, so mm-hmm. I'm going to get the power.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. That might be kind of a fun thing, because if only three dice get rolled, everyone's going to get one die, and it's predetermined what they're going to get by whatever they have the most of.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're somebody who's like got a lot of science and diplomacy, and then you're ganking other things. But the idea being that it would balance itself out mm-hmm. eventually.
Well, so the flow of this that I'm imagining here is that the whoever rolled the die, player one, they get first pick, but they're almost certainly not going to get to take everything. Then the next guy around gets to pick up the next thing, and so on and so forth. So when you're all playing cards to add dice or remove dice or whatever,
uh-huh.
the guy who's further around the table is going to want to make sure there's extra dice in there so that he has a chance to pick more stuff up and get more points.
Right.
You know, but the last guy around already knows, look, dude, I'm not likely to get anything at all, so I'm going to play different cards on this turn to screw other people in some way,
right.
so that they also don't get more dice.
Like maybe he plays a card to remove several dice to try and make it hard for people.
Yeah. So that goes around, and basically people take dice, which correspond with points on their scales, and they increase the scale as they go until there are no dice left. And then the round ends, and then the player one position moves to the guy on the left. And so now the guy who went first is last in the order. But he also has more points to spend on things. And so kind of as you go around there, you're balancing. You need to spend. Oh, and also you can at the end of the round, then you can spend points to draw more cards. But you don't have to. Okay. So what you're balancing is spending points to get more cards and to take other actions to screw everybody, but also saving points to get score at the end of the game and to bring the game to an end, knowing that in order to gain points in the scale that you probably want, the influence that you want based on your goal card, you have to first bulk up in another piece of influence first.
Okay.
You can't. It's faster to earn points of one type by specking in another direction,
right?
Kind of. So that's kind of the idea, and that's as far as I got in the short time that I had.
Cool. Couple of thoughts then.
Yeah.
One, it would be neat if the person with the most power always goes first in any given turn. The person with the most diplomacy gets some other benefit. The person with the most science gets some other benefit. I think that you can never be like, okay, so I think that's cool simply because you could use that for balancing,
mm-hmm.
And also as ways to hose people. The other thing that I think would be neat is because then ties are a problem, right?
Yeah.
And the easy, well, if it's a tie, then it's negated. That sucks. What if instead, as soon as someone ties you in a score, you lose one? Because the simple fact that they're as powerful as you or as sciencey as you when you were the leader before knocks you down a peg, right? So if you're at 7 and I get to 7 with science, now we're both at 7 with science, you automatically drop to 6. And now I'm the new leader. Because what's punishing you for me And then if you get to 7, yeah, exactly, right? Advance.
Okay.
So, and if you, the next turn, move it up to 7, it forces me down because it's like, aha, no, mm-hmm. we're back. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of a neat way
to... That's not
to,
bad. I like that.
To kind of... It feels very political influence-y, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. and I think that's kind of neat. So mm-hmm. that is an impressively well-thought idea for yeah. the time you had.
And then in terms of game end, maybe you go around the table just one time or... No, I'm sorry. No, the game ends when somebody chooses to control the Astrogate, and there's right. no way you're going to be able to have 8 points at the start of the game. Or, I don't, maybe no way, but it's very, very unlikely you're going to have be able to have eight influence points in one type at the at the end of the first round, or even the first, yeah, first
right.
time around.
Right.
Victory points, you get 1 point for each influence that you have, but if you cash in, and it's a scale of 8, right? So, but if you cash in, if you take claim the Astrogate and do so with the same influence type that was in your Seeker card, then that's actually going to be worth like 12 victory points instead of the raw 8 that you spent to get there.
Right.
You know?
One balancing you could do to stop so to make sure that nobody ever could win on turn one and also make it something more interesting is if you ever get more than 5, you can never get more than 5 points in a round for any given thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the justification behind that would be that if you rise to power or science or diplomacy too quickly, people would question that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you went from 0 to 8 power in turn one, people are like, whoa, 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 whoa. This guy is a tyrant, right? Or... If you sure. do that with science, then clearly your science is probably false. And if you do that with diplomacy, mm-hmm. then obviously you're lying to everyone, right? So mm-hmm. as a way to kind of
okay.
balance it. They just, again, because I think this is a game where those three things could really be cool the way they would yeah. play together. So yeah. good. We should probably move on.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. We are short on time once again. So, all right. So we have some comments on the website I was going to read.
Yeah, do it.
First of all, several from Robin Gibson. Robin says, I know who Diesel 10 is. Good job. He must have kids as well. Second, he said, as a webcomics fan, I'm not used to defending the oatmeal because it's for basics. But I got Exploding Kittens for Christmas, and he enjoys it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Yes, he said it's way better than he expected it would be. Stop trying to make digital happen. That's what he said to us.
Oh, did he?
Yes, stop well. Trying to make digital happen. And then, because he deserves extra points, uh-huh. he sent me a, he included a picture from the movie Mean Girls, which is where the, that original quote comes from. Stop trying to make that happen. It's not going to happen. So okay. good for him with that. And also he included in here for you, All Hail the Turtle God. It was Turtles All the Way Down. And Turtles All the Way Down is one of my favorite expressions that never gets used by people.
Turtles All the Way Down. I don't know that one.
So the idea of Turtles All the Way Down is it's based on the supposedly it comes from this lecture, which I'm sure is BS. But this guy is trying to explain Bertrand Russell, maybe, or something like that. Bertrand something.
Okay.
He's trying to explain this lecture about how the earth is round and blah, 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 blah. And this lady says, no, the earth is flat and it rests on the back of a giant turtle. And he says, but what is the turtle standing on? And she says, you're a smart man, but it's turtles all the way down. Meaning like it's a turtle with a bigger turtle.
On
with
a
bigger
turtle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I love that expression because it's like, I can't explain it and I don't have a good answer. So it's turtles all the way down. So
okay.
I like that expression. I kind of want to design a game called Turtles All the Way Down.
All right, Jason's next pitch, Turtles All the Way Down.
No promises on that, but it's a game where you stack turtles.
No. Yeah.
So anyways, so those are from him.
Okay.
Yes. And I think I might have an email, but you've got some tweets. So
got some tweets here. We've got from Sparks Games. How does Stella get her groove back? And by Stella, he means designers. And getting her groove back, he means start designing again after a long break. # personal ask. So I was kind of in that situation because I spent so much time last year in development. I talked about that before. So much time in development on Saloon Tycoon that I didn't spend a lot of time designing in the back half of the year. And so when we came to the new year here and started talking about Unpub, I knew that I needed to get my butt back in gear. And I did it much the same way that I often do, is I just open up a blank page and just start typing and start talking. Yep. And like, I do that a lot talking to myself, you know, hey dummy, what kind of game are you going to make? Well, let's pick a game. What do you want to work on? And I just start talking to myself about pros and cons of any games that I've already got. And that's eventually how I ended up coming back to Smithereens. And then, you know, it will, why is this an exciting game to you? I would ask myself, well, the exciting things about it are this, this, and this. Well, what didn't work before? Well, these are things that didn't work before. Okay, well, what can you do about that?
Right.
And that's what got me going. So that works very well for me. Just like tonight with Astrogate, I did the same thing. I sat down and I started writing myself, hey, dummy, you need to, I didn't say dummy, I said a much more unpleasant word.
I bet you did.
Hey, dummy, you need to pitch a game tonight, so get on that.
Hey, you stupid.
Yeah. So, let's see, a couple more here. We have from Tom Gerganis, question, have you subscribed to the Go Forth and Game podcast yet? I actually did. I subscribed earlier today. I haven't listened to it yet, but I am a subscriber.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So
I never remember to subscribe to podcasts, so don't feel bad.
Yeah.
So but if I did, I would, and you should.
I might listen to that on the drive.
Tom's a cool guy.
From
so,
your house.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then Darren Broad. He just says, awesome. I have a road trip on Friday to a con, so I'll have some more listenables. He was saying, hey, great. Yes. You guys are recording.
Well, you've already went to that con. Hope it was fun.
Hope it was a good one.
Yes.
Yeah. What else you got?
We have a voicemail here.
Okay.
I'm just going to play the voicemail. I don't know who. I think it's from Len, actually. I'm not sure. Because the Google Translate is so bad.
You can never count on that. But I think they leave it bad on
PG,
purpose.
PG, here with the watch. And I think that means BTG, Leonard Wexford, is what I'm guessing.
Sure.
Let's find out together, though, okay, if that's what it says.
BG, Leonard Wexford here. It is the 11th of December 2016, and I just got done listening to episode 189. 189! It sounds so much bigger than 188. I mean, seriously, it did. I didn't realize how close we are to the big 200. But at the end of that episode, Jason said that the next week you're going to talk about the Unpub update, and so I wanted to talk to Rob and say that I think you should take two games with you. I know you said you're only going to take one and you were going to focus on one and that was it. But here's the scenario. You take Smithereens there, right? Something goes catastrophically wrong that you didn't predict. You get really bummed out and pissed off and then you have nothing. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it's a scenario. So just pack in the march to the grave. I can never pronounce that first word because I'm a moron. In the bag. That way if something happens, maybe you just have a little something there to spice the day up. Hope that makes sense. Ramble as usual. Love the show. Keep it up. Talk to you guys later. Have a great day. Bye.
That, I want to say, Len, that is astounding advice.
It's an excellent point.
That
Absolutely.
Is a really good point.
Yeah.
And I know Rob, and that is bound to happen because that is Rob's hey. Luck. No, that is your luck, right? You'd bring one game and then get hosed with it. So yeah, that is...
That's not a bad idea.
That's really good advice. What I thought Len was going to say was, so bring soda cans. Yeah. But no, he did not.
Yeah, not even close to being anything even prototypable.
But you work on another game that you were enjoying that you haven't pitched yet?
I was working on that emergency room game.
Oh, yeah.
I did prototype that this weekend.
Oh, sweet. And
it was okay. I played it through a few times myself and found a lot of problems with it that I think are potentially... adjustable and fixable.
So one super cool thing about bringing a solo game there would be you could do multiple games at once.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, say that like there's a couple, right? Or a couple of friends, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the girl is super into games and she brought the guy with her, right? And mm-hmm. so they're there together and you're like, hey, play this game together. Like play it as a team, right?
Yeah.
Because you can play solo games as a team game,
sure.
You know?
You just make your decisions together.
Yeah, you just make your decisions together about what to do. And, you know, and that actually could be super fun when you think about it, like mm-hmm. debating with each other about, no, we got to save this patient, dude. He's going to die, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a good idea. That is a good idea. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, do that.
Okay. Maybe I will.
That's all I have.
Okay.
We had some older Twitter comments. We're still getting comments of, hey, I'm listening to the show. I have to be honest, as much as like statistically, it's probably not doing anything for us anymore. It just makes me happy when somebody's like, listen to your show right now. It's like, hey, all right, that's sweet.
Cool. Yeah, it's fun.
You could be having a bad day at work and it's like, boom, somebody's listening to my show. It makes you feel good, you know?
Okay. Good. The only other thing I would say tonight is that it's February 1st. We're recording this a couple of weeks in advance. Hopefully by now, I know when Saloon Tycoon is going to be on Kickstarter. If I know when it's going to be on Kickstarter, then I'll put that in right here. Saloon Tycoon will be coming to Kickstarter on February 18th, 2016. Okay.
Oh, isn't that's that good
a,
to know.
That yeah, it's a know, great yeah. date. It's a perfect date. So go back Saloon Tycoon on Kickstarter. on that date. Yeah. And that date again is February 18th. Okay.
Sweet.
All right.
Wait, what was that again?
February 18th.
Okay, good.
Good. I'm all right. I just want to help. Okay. So check out Slim Tycoon on Kickstarter February 18th. And I'm so proud of the game. Could not be more proud of it. And
it looks great.
I think you guys are going to love it. Yeah, the art is incredible. Everything about it is really just pure love from me. So I'm looking forward to everyone's support. Thank you so much. I think it's exciting. I think it's going to be big.
One quick side note.
Sure.
Not to take away from your thunder.
Okay.
But we both designed games for Mr. Tagmire for this postcard
thing. Oh, yeah. Right.
My game is coming out in February. So
cool.
I'm not allowed to say what it is yet, but it's coming out in February.
Okay, not even when this episode goes up, you can't?
I can't say what the movie is.
Okay.
Yet, so, but I saw the artwork and it's really good.
It was pretty
good.
I was really happy with it.
So, and it's one of my favorites. Yeah. So I'm really excited.
That's on their Patreon, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And you can still subscribe.
Patreon, I think if you're a $5 backer level, you get it every month. And there's a lot of great designers and a lot of great movies.
Yeah.
So you should do that.
You definitely
He's also going to have them for sale separately. Say that's not your deal. He'll have them for sale, I think, on his website until he runs out. I don't know how much he'll charge. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick up some copies. I get some free copies, and I'm going to buy some more so I can give those out to some friends and family and some builders when we see you guys around. So.
Cool.
Because I'm really happy with how it turned out. So, yeah. I think that's all we got.
Okay. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to billinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland. I am @poorly_design. Like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and other podcast platforms. Google Play, if that works. I don't know. Visit our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, where you can find links to buy our games. Call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. And don't forget to tweet at us with #BTGRumors to spread horrible, hilarious lies all about us. And go back to Slim Tycoon on Kickstarter starting on February 18th. Thank you very much. And that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
We're good.
All right. It's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right.